Hello, folks. This is Brad Foreman with Peaks Podcast, episode 56, season 4, Everest. One thing I can guarantee, there will not be a dull moment in this podcast. I'm working on day 26. We are at 21,000 plus feet above sea level at Camp 2. The scene here is like something out of a movie with barren, glaciated landscape. We have our tent set up on the far, far north side of the terrain, the furthest up towards the trailhead, which goes to the infamous Camp 3 up the Lhotse face. So we are basically the last stop. Getting into camp and being on the far end was kind of a challenging moment. You know, you see the tents from half a mile away, and they never seem to get closer, and they just keep walking and walking, and you finally get to the tents, and then you realize, hey, our campsite is another long ways up. So we finally get to our camp, and they're set up, and we're right on the edge of a trickling glacial runoff stream. So the benefit about being so far up the glacier is that we are at the headwaters of the glacial runoff. What does that mean? Well, in lay terms, it means we have fresh water. Everybody downstream has less pure water, so I'm pretty happy to be up here. It's real nice. Our campsites are getting more primitive and primitive as we get higher and higher, but they're just a sight for sore eyes, no doubt about it. We get our stuff unpacked as usual and prepare for a couple days here at Camp 2. Amazingly high, amazingly desolate. So we have a dinner call, and we head towards the dining tent, which is a nice dome tent with a table set up. And little did I know that everything, my life, was going to change in the next moments. We get into the tent, and as a protocol, we do a simple test of pulse ox. You basically pass this device around that fits on the tip of your finger, and it gives you a reading of your oxygen level in your blood. I wouldn't say it's 100% accurate, but it's the best thing we have up here to monitor oxygen in the blood. Well, I look down, I'm the first one to use it, and the reading is quite low. I mean, for myself, I'm usually the 80s plus, and my pulse ox reading is in the 50s. Of course, I write it off to being being at the extreme altitude and being cold. So I check the pulse ox and do it a second time. And once again, I come up with a reading in the high 50s. And it's not a real super good situation. I immediately notice that the concern of our lead guide and I start to get a little bit more serious, warm up my hands, and get ready for another test. So I put the device on my fingertip yet again, a third time, in low 60s. So I'm not super concerned, but Jacob asked me to take a walk for 10 minutes. Now I am getting concerned. So I take a 10-minute walk around camp. The minutes pass like hours. The minutes pass like hours. I walk and come back to camp at about the 7-minute mark, the 8-minute mark, the 9-minute mark, and finally 10 minutes. And I take the test again. What happens? It's low. So I can tell things are escalating quickly. My heart begins to pound excessively. I asked Jacob to take me, come outside and discuss this with me and keep things discreet. Before I know it, after dinner, I'm actually moving my gear over to Jacob's tent so I can be given oxygen on the a nose device. Like it's a little thin plastic device that goes around your ears and then into your nostrils, flooding you with oxygen. So I go through this and spend the night on this. And let me tell you, I am deadly concerned. All this preparation, all the scenarios are going through my mind. It's crazy. You know, what if I'm just sick to my stomach thinking after all this, something might go wrong and I have to leave. But I try to push that thought out of my mind, and the night goes on, basically sleepless. I get up in the morning, and I have a lingering cough through the night. That's not good. And number two, I take off the oxygen. I take a pulse ox test again. And what happens? Down low. That means there is an issue. I don't know what it is, but there is some kind of an issue. Immediately, Jacob gets on the radio, calls to base camp, which calls to Kathmandu, which calls to the evac. Unbelievable, but Brad is being evac'd via helicopter from Camp 2. 21,000 feet. I'm told to pack my stuff in a matter of minutes. I am literally sick to my stomach, thinking the worst, that I might not be able to rejoin the team. I try to push this thought out of my mind. It does no good one way or the other. But the reality of packing my stuff and heading a couple, several hundred yards over to the Hela landing site is a big dose of reality, something that I can't deny. I just can't believe it. Even now, telling the story, I cringe. But anyhow, I go down to the heliport. I have Karma and two other Sherpas and Jacob escorting me, helping me along the way, as if I'm an invalid, but I appreciate their assistance. But I just wanted to say, hey, let me do this myself. Honestly. So we wait at the helipad. We hear on the radio that the helicopter's coming. And of course, the whole camp is alerted to this helicopter coming. And everybody's looking up to see what's going on. And right in the center of everything is Brad being evacuated. Brad being evacuated from Camp 2. The helicopter lands. A pilot's skill is extremely good to be able to land at 21 plus thousand feet. The air so thin you can barely feel it going into your lungs. And apparently it's not getting into my lungs very well. Get into the helicopter, load my gear, and it's crazy. With a high elevation, these things have to take off at an angle downhill just to be able to get off the ground. So we basically scrape very closely to the surface of the glacier as we take off and zoom down to base camp. Pop into base camp. It only takes minutes. A trip that took 2 days, I'm in base camp in minutes. We quickly exchange a couple. I needed one thing very important in base camp was my vaccination information, which was in a notebook in a lockup, and also my wallet. So we stopped into base camp to grab those two items. I knew I was going to have to go to the hospital, so I wanted to have the credentials correct and extra cash in the event of an issue. I do have insurance and prepared well for this kind of event, but you never know. Of course, the big boss is there, hands off my credentials, my notebook and wallet to me. Dawa, I mean, I looked him in the eye. It was so painful to have to concede to Everest at this point. And I don't know, after training so much, it was extremely difficult to look at the big boss and realize that I got to go down. I mean, it's the only safe thing to do, but it's still a huge, huge burden. Psychologically. So I suck it up and sit back for the ride down to Lukla, and then from Lukla, a different helicopter down to Kathmandu. The whole process takes probably less than an hour, and coming into Kathmandu, I can already feel the thick air filling my lungs. It feels good. It feels real good. We bypass the airport and fly right into HAMS, H-A-M-S, hospital. I think this is kind of a VIP hospital where they take care of emergencies. And I've never... I mean, it's like something out of a movie. I'm landing on the top of a building in my boots, just come from a glacier, one of the most remote places in the world, and here I am at Kathmandu Hospital. These guys come out with a gurney to the top of the heliport on top of the building, and they basically want me to get in the gurney, which I refuse. But because there's a police soldier there, I concede and get in the gurney, sit on the gurney, and get wheeled down to the emergency ward. Okay, I'm going to make this quick because the next 6 to 8 hours is horribly, horribly painful. I have to go through every known test to man. They check my heart. They did some electromagnetic tests. They did a X-ray. They did a swab for COVID, of course. And the long and short of it is, guess what? They found nothing. My heart was strong. They said it looked exceptional. I was actually watching my heart beat, pitter, patter, pitter, patter. It was more like thump, 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 thump. So now I'm sitting here thinking, okay, you're okay. You're not the weak link. You can go forward, right? Well, not that easy. So after several hours of needless paperwork, it seemed, I was met by the Expedition Base Camp, or I should say Kathmandu leader, and the son of Dawa. Super nice. It was so great to see a familiar face. You know, here I'm basically in another country in a pandemic situation, lockdown, and know no one. Imagine that feeling. And being told your lifetime dream is going down the tubes. So anyhow, these guys show up, and it's kind of like a breath of fresh air. I feel revived. We discuss plans to get me back up onto the mountain. You know, how do we do it? What do I got to do? I'm going through all these scenarios in my head with them. But basically, the first thing we got to do is check out. There's tens of thousands of dollars worth of bills that the insurance company obviously is trying to dispute, as they always do. But this is as legit as it gets, you know. I'm 59 years old. I have a situation in a mountain, and I'm completely insured, and it needed to be checked out. Bottom line, I checked out okay, and they need to take care of this. I'll fight that battle, I'm sure, for some time, but the main thing is I'm healthy, and I get out of the hospital that night and into the Hotel Hyatt, and of course, I'm having tea with Naaman and Dawa's son, and we take care of all the necessary paperwork. I don't know, I've been up for 48 hours plus, but, you know, I still got to finish this paperwork to make things complete. So we sit up for a couple more hours and take pictures of all the cardio information produced by the hospital to prove that I was there, I guess. And so that was an exercise that was exhausting, basically. But we got it done and moved on to the evening. And it was probably one of the, I was still coughing, but it was one of the best nights ever, just down at 5,000 feet from 21,000. I slept like a baby, except for coughing. So there's a couple things now. I need to get ready to get back up on the mountain the next day. So I'm going through the list of things I need to take care of. Number one is the cough. I steam bath, try to break that up. I hand wash all my clothes, get them ready for the trip back up onto the mountain. I talk to base camp commander Scott, and I talk to my Kathmandu team. The last component is global rescue. I need to make sure that I'm insured. So, I go and, I should mention, I did call home and alert family, wife, mom, that, you know, things are okay in case they heard something from the Coconut Telegraph from Kathmandu. So I made sure that they knew the situation up front so that there would be no leaks that could put people into a tailspin on gossip. That went well. Discouraging talking to family, but they were they were very supportive, and their support really meant a lot to me. You know, one of my lifelong dreams is Everest, and it's disintegrating right before my eyes. So their support was huge. I mean, huge. I also need to mention, leaving my team up on the mountain, you know, was huge. We've become a family up there, and, you know, I don't know about them, but I take it very serious, and I wanted to get back up there and be a part of my team quickly. And down here in Kathmandu, I just felt hollow and displaced would be the best way to describe it. So I spend day 27 working on this insurance thing. That's, you know, the cough was seemingly getting better, but the insurance thing was not. After hours and hours of discussion, I came to the realization that I am not going to be reinsured. Now, this is huge. You know, at my age, or at any age, on a mountain like Everest, it would be absolutely irresponsible. It would be absolutely irresponsible for me to go up there and put my team at risk and my family without the proper insurance to be evacuated. Lord only knows how extensive evacuation can get. It can be much worse than my simple little helicopter ride. And with every complication comes expense. I wasn't going to be any lower on the mountain. I was going to be much higher on the mountain, 21,000 plus in the next days. So the insurance was critical. And bottom line is, they told me they would not, I repeat, would not reinsure me if the situation occurred again in the next 90 days. Okay, folks, I don't know if this strikes home, but it hit me like a brick between the eyes. I realize now that I am unable to rejoin my team. I am unable to go forward with my objective. I am unable to fulfill this dream. Pretty difficult to swallow, but I've been trying to get my head around this. I am right now in the Kathmandu airport heading back. My team has just returned from the icefall, and I was so hoping to be there at base camp to greet them. But I don't have a choice. I cannot be so self-centered that I go up and not take all the factors into mind. I mean, it would be irresponsible for me to go up there and continue uninsured. I think it could also be a psychological burden, knowing that if something happened in the back of my mind, it could be an issue. There's also the fact that why was my pulse ox low? I mean, I trained. I'm in the best shape of my life. The best shape of my life. I spent 30 days at 10,000 feet elevation before leaving for Kathmandu and Everest to give myself an edge. It worked perfectly on Denali. I felt that I was definitely in the top 50% of our team health-wise. So why? Why is my pulse ox low? Why did it get low? And for that one reason, not knowing the answer to that, and that it could happen again, has made it very clear. I leave Everest for another day. And that's my decision. I am flying back now, and I'm not sure how this is going to proceed in the future. I can say that my trip to Everest was one of the best ever. Going through the ice falls solo is a memory I'll never forget, an accomplishment I'll never forget. Camp 2 was unbelievable. The people I got to hang with were awesome. I so hope my team makes it. Regardless of my disposition, I'm rooting for them 100%. I hope they listen to this podcast and get that message. Our team that was guiding us were top-notch. Everything was set for the win. But as chance has it, it wasn't meant to be this time. So I've learned a good lesson. You know, all the preparation in the world doesn't mean that you're going to be guaranteed success. I loved this trip, and reflect more in the next podcast. But for now, that's the story. And I'm going to catch a plane back to the States. I'm going to end this chapter. And I appreciate you all for listening and enjoying, hopefully, my podcast, Peaks Podcast. We will obviously continue. And remember that there's always a lesson to be learned. Get out there and enjoy the outdoors. I'm going to have some super video and photos on my website, www.peakspodcast.rocks. And, of course, never forget the charity. That's www.foreman7project.org. And let's help those kids realize their potential. All the funds go to kids in need. And thank you for listening. Please put your comments in your favorite podcast platform. And share this podcast with your friends and family. Until the next podcast, thank you and have a great day. Bye-bye.